Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And, Jim, we start with the good. And this is a story we covered fairly extensively, but a while ago. It's taken a long time for this to really get into the good martini, because it was the bad martini for quite a long time. But as you report in the Morning Jolt today, federal prosecutors are likely to bring criminal charges against General Motors over an ignition switch defect linked to more than 100 deaths, but they still have to hash out key issues with GM, including whether the automaker will need to plead guilty and how big a fine it will have to pay, people familiar with the matter said. And this, of course, got more complicated since the government was essentially running GM when this problem started, and we didn't find out a whole lot about it. It was kind of kept under wraps for a very long time. But a number of deaths, a number of injuries, and finally, it looks like, a little bit of accountability here.
Yeah, when the word of the switches and fatal accidents resulting from the problem in these GM-made cars came to light, Greg, the number tossed around was that the taxpayers had lost $10.5 billion on the bailout for GM. I now went back and checked. It's up to $11.2 billion. They revised the figures, and it turns out it was even more expensive than before. We're never getting that money back. The two things we can hope for are, one, accountability for the people who helped cover up this potentially fatal issue with the switches. It could make the car just stop in the middle of the highway when it was suddenly going a certain speed. The prosecutors are now saying they're likely to bring criminal charges against the company as a whole, and perhaps even individual engineers or figures in the company who they believe helped cover it up. That's all really good. The next big step is, can we get people to recognize the federal government should not own a car company? And I still kind of feel like there's an aspect there that hasn't been nearly as much discussion of that. In some ways, this is kind of the prototypical way the Obama administration handled something, shoveling money out the door without a great deal of foresight, without a close eye on how the money was being spent. Allegedly, this is all about changing that dysfunctional corporate culture of GM, and Mary Barra was going to come in and change everything. And now we find out, well, no, she was head of the engineering department, but she had no idea that this fatal error was in those cars and stuff. So it was a small amount of justice being done, but still a larger sense of perhaps the policy lessons to be learned. Still a bit some work to be done here.
Obviously, the bailout started under the Bush administration, but the whole framework for the larger structure of the bailout and going forward with GM over the long term was certainly formulated inside the Obama administration. On to the bad martini now, Jim. And it was last week that this interview the president did with Jeffrey Goldberg of The Atlantic, the main headline that came out of it was that Obama didn't think we were losing to ISIS. But another very important and perhaps even more troubling passage comes over the fact that Goldberg asked him about, can Iran ever really be trusted, even if you make this agreement, because of what they've said over and over and over again about their hatred of the Jews, their hatred of Israel, and their desire to see Israel wiped off the map. Obama responded to this theory by saying the following: well, does the fact that you are anti-Semitic or racist doesn't preclude you from being interested in survival? It doesn't preclude you from being rational about the need to keep your economy afloat. It doesn't preclude you from making strategic decisions about how you stay in power. And so the fact that the supreme leader is anti-Semitic doesn't mean that this overrides all his other considerations. You know, if you look at the history of anti-Semitism, Jeff, there were a whole lot of European leaders, and there were deep strains of anti-Semitism in this country. So, Jim, there are some anti-Semites in America, so that is apparently now equivalent to the desire to see Israel exterminated.
To give credit where it's due, Greg, we should point out there are quite a few folks who would say they're anti-Semites in the Obama administration, judging by the way they talk about Israel and things like that. Two things jump out. One, Walter Russell Mead has a really, I think, a very fair point here, which is that once you've decided that you're an off-your-rocker, cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs anti-Semite, who believes that Jews control the media and the vest, they control the banks, and they're these sinister powers behind every decision. And, you know, once you believe all that stuff, it's kind of hard to say, well, but they're otherwise really rational in every other part of their thinking. And that basically is what Obama's argument here amounts to, which is that, yes, they're crazy anti-Semites, but they're rationally acting crazy anti-Semites. And I just don't think people really find that very persuasive. And then the part that just kind of jumped out at me, and it just reminded me of, you know, oh, Christians got to get up off their high horse, was his statement that there were deep strains of anti-Semitism in this country. One, I'll defer to people who have a more thorough knowledge of the history of anti-Semitism in the U.S. than I do. I'm sure there are plenty of Jews in the United States who experienced a sense of being a second-class citizen. No, you can't come into our club. You can't join our golf club. We don't want to do business with you. I'm sure there have been all kinds of unpleasant things like that. But to compare it to Iran, which basically wants to wipe Israel off the face of the earth, right? And I just pointed to some survey numbers over in the corner where, you know, majorities of the Iranian public believe Jews control the media. Jews are responsible for the world's wars. Jews control the U.S. government, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, like the idea that, you know, these two things are comparable, I think is very – I think it's kind of irrelevant to the discussion of the Iranian government today to point to our past flaws. And I think that this just kind of it's revealing something in Obama's mind that whenever somebody brings up something that ISIS is doing or the Iranian government is doing or that any extremist Islamist Muslim is doing today, he just – his mind just – you know, like the doctor pressing the knee with the little hammer, rubber hammer, it just reflexively he goes to, well, let's talk about our flaws. We're not perfect either. As if you have to be perfect to point to say, no, Iranian government is horrifically anti-Semitic. And in that sense, because they're so irrationally anti-Semitic, maybe we can't count on them to be rational actors. Or maybe their definition of rationality is very different from ours. So a not reassuring answer from the president when it comes to the topic of can we trust the Iranian government.
On to the crazy martini now. And yesterday, of course, was Memorial Day. The president was at Arlington National Cemetery. He made a brief remarks there. He placed a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknowns. And also, the White House sent out this tweet. For many of us, this Memorial Day is especially meaningful. It is the first since our war in Afghanistan came to an end. And that's a quote from President Obama. And as Jim, as you point out in your post on that earlier today, there's just another member of the U.S. Army killed in Afghanistan. Taliban gunmen surrounding a police compound, killing 19 police officers in Helmand Province. So, while major combat operations might officially be over, it's pretty clear the war isn't.
There were a lot of people who were very angered by that statement yesterday, Greg, and I think very justifiably. That, yes, you know, there's less sustained military engagements in Afghanistan. Time magazine's cover story this week is about the failure of American foreign policy. Just note, Greg, that when it's going well, it's Obama's foreign policy. When it's failing, it's America's foreign policy. Right. Somehow it's our fault, you know. It's not like Afghanistan is at peace. It's not like the Afghan government has the upper hand against the Taliban. If anything, things are getting worse over there. And for him to come out and say that the war in Afghanistan is over, one, you got to wonder about the family of the you know, young man who was killed in Afghanistan about a month or so ago. And then you got to also wonder about all the folks who've been injured since then. In other words, like if we're still shooting at the Taliban and the Taliban is still shooting at us, then I don't think in most people's minds that counts as combat operations being over because they kind of thought the combat would stop once you declare combat operations are over. And just kind of the broader theme of this that points out in that Time article, you know, the president sees what he wants to see. We discussed this in the previous martini with Iran, that basically he wants to see success. So he'll say that, you know, we have a slight setback against ISIS, but otherwise we're still succeeding. You know, it's this general broad sense of, no, everything's going fine. The Chip Diller approach to foreign policy and, you know, the failures and problems and worsening dangers are reaching a point where they just can't be ignored anymore.
Wish we had happier news coming out of the Memorial Day holiday weekend, but all three of these are pretty horrible. Even the good martini, obviously, is predicated in a number of people dying due to negligence. So given that and the president's performance over the past few days, not a real hopeful start to the week, but at least it sets the bar low for the remaining days.
There we go. Not a high bar to clear.
On that note, Jim, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us, and tune in on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.